On tonight's program, ladies and gentlemen, we have something that's going to make you sick.
Leave medicine to medical men.
They were talking about in health class how pregnancy, it can often lead to an infant.
This is a house of learned doctors. You're not a doctor.
Dr. Scholl makes foot products. And he's a doctor, so he went to school for a long time. But it doesn't take a lot to figure out that stepping on a cushion will be more comfortable. That guy wasted lots of time at school. Because I'd have bought that from a Mr. Show. Maybe even a Senor Show.
Guess what I have?
Why, are they baffled down at the clinic?
Dr. Barry Dworkin is here. It's time for the Wednesday House Call. Taking your health-related questions at 521-TALK, star 580 or 1-800-580-CFRA. Good to see you again.
Good to see you, too.
Welcome back.
Thank you.
Let's get right to the phone lines. Trish in Ottawa. Trish.
Hi, Doctor.
Hi.
I'm 77 years old, and I have been taking Crestor for 5 years or more. Last Christmas, I was in agony with pain in my arms, shoulders, and across my back. You suggested it may be PMR. I had the blood test. It didn't show up. My doctor gave me large doses of prednisone, and that gave me good relief, but not completely. Against my doctor's wishes, I came off the Crestor and tried 1 milligram of Sesame and Voltaren gel, which worked very well.
Mm-hmm.
6 weeks ago, I had to go back on the Crestor. Now I am in exactly the same position as last year. I tried taking 2 Sesames, but my stomach wouldn't tolerate it. And I am back taking large doses of prednisone as well as the Sesame. My doctor said it's not the Crestor because the pain would be all over my body, not just at the top. Any ideas, please, doctor?
So what you're saying is that when you were off the Crestor, you had improved?
Yes.
Okay, and then nothing has changed other than starting the Crestor again?
Yes, and the cold weather.
Okay, and then since the start of the Crestor, the pain has returned?
Oh, it's terrible.
Well, again, one of the ways to prove this is to stop the Crestor. I'd speak to your physician, but I would say there's no harm in stopping the Crestor for 2 or 4 weeks.
I stopped it for 6 months all summer, doctor, yeah. And I was good on the Sesame and the Voltaren cream. It was very manageable, but as soon as I started taking this, it started again.
Well, I would say that it would probably be a good idea to, again, speak with your physician and discuss stopping the Crestor and see if the pain resolves. And if it does,
It does, doctor, but I've got in my immediate family, there's 5 people died of heart attacks, mm-hmm. and this is what he's concerned about.
Well, there are other medications that can be used if Crestor or any statin medication is not tolerated.
Yeah.
There are other types of medications that, although may not necessarily be as effective, can certainly reduce the risk.
I was on the Lipidil all summer, mm-hmm. but my cholesterol shot up when I went for my tests.
Well, the point is, though, is that if you're having a quality of life that has been significantly impaired by the pain that you are experiencing,
yes.
and it is due to the Crestor, one has to ask the question, well, although it may help prevent heart disease and heart attack, if that prevention
yes.
results in you being in agony and suffering, what is the point of taking the Crestor?
I agree, doctor. I agree, but I wanted to ask you,
sure.
have you ever known anyone else where it's only affected the muscles and across the back and down the arm and not the rest of the body? Because this is why doctor thinks that it's not Crestor. He said it would be all over me.
Well, it's not necessarily, doesn't necessarily have to happen all over. The issue is that, and again, the way to prove that is, as you've already done, if you stopped the Crestor and you had pain that had disappeared, the original pain had subsided since you stopped the Crestor. And then when you restarted it, the pain came back.
Yeah.
The side effects from medications is not necessarily the same for everybody. So in terms of muscle pains, which is admittedly relatively rare when you take statins, but it does happen. It's about 3 per 1,000 people that can suffer with this kind of condition. So
yes.
3 per 10,000, sorry, that can suffer with this kind of pain. But nevertheless, I think having that discussion with the physician saying, look, I'm going to stop the Crestor again and we'll see if the pain disappears. And if it does, regardless of how it's supposed to
yes.
cause pain all over your body,
I agree.
If the pain goes away, it's certainly a cause and effect, situation, especially if everything else that you're doing is remaining the same, and that's what's very important.
They've no idea what it is then. If it's not the PMR, I've had four blood tests this year and it's not showing up. I've seen a rheumatologist, I've had acupuncture, I've done every alternative therapy I could think of.
Right.
The only thing that worked was just 1 milligram of sesame and Voltaren and cream, and that was really good.
Well, if that's what makes things work and that's what helps you, then ultimately, you know, it is your
my decision.
Your decision.
Yes.
And so your physician can make recommendations.
Yeah. I'll be seeing him tomorrow.
But ultimately,
if
a medication is not being tolerated, then a decision
I feel awful going against my doctor because he's a marvelous doctor.
Well,
he said it's not that.
Well, you shouldn't consider this to be a personal issue. You're not going against anybody. This is your body, and you're the one living with the discomfort. And it's a very simple matter of saying, look, I would like to see if this indeed is the Crestor. We'll keep everything else, all the other medications the same.
Yeah.
And I want to stop the Crestor and see if my pain goes away. If it does, that tells us something. If it doesn't, then okay, then let's look for something else that can help me out.
Yeah.
But ultimately, your physician shouldn't take offense by you saying, I'm having a lot of pain and I'd like to try this to see if this works.
He's your friend, actually.
Yes.
Because I said I was going to phone Dr. Dorkin, but I was too ill. That was last week. And he said, oh, you're his biggest fan. I said, I am. Well, thank you very much, doctor. I really appreciate it, because this is what I think myself, my quality of life, if I've got to carry on like this, I may as well be dead with the rest of my family.
Well, and
I am 77.
Yeah, there's always a balance between quality of life and the medications that we take.
Yes.
Well, I wish you all the best.
Oh, I can't thank you enough. Thank you, doctor.
You're very welcome.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
So good luck to Trish. 317 on CFRA. Dr. Barry Dworkin is here. And every single phone line available right now at 521-TALK, star 580, 1-800-580-CFRA. So I have to ask you what you think about a generic version of OxyContin coming to the market.
Yeah.
The federal government is not going to step in here. Mm-hmm. It says provincial health authorities can regulate the drug, and if there are problems with abuse, and we know there are widespread problems with abuse of this drug, that's up to the provinces to control that kind of thing. I don't have any personal experience with this other than one time when I went back to Cape Breton Island. My grandmother was on this particular drug and was instructed by her physician not to tell anyone that she was on it. And the reason for that was because of a rash of break-ins and whatnot. People will break in. They break into pharmacies. They break into homes if they find out that this drug is available. The original version was changed so that it could no longer be abused. They changed the formulation of it, but the generic version is the same old, right?
Yeah. So in effect, it doesn't take much to predict what will happen, because it already has happened. The drug is easily abused. It's crushed. It's dissolved. It can be injected. It can be snorted. That was the whole point with changing the formulation, so you couldn't do that anymore. So if you literally flood the market again with generic OxyContin,
generic hydrocodone, cheaper, right,
you will end up with the exact same situation.
We're headed right
before.
Down this road again.
Yeah,
in other words,
it'll be right down the road again. Pharmacies will be broken into as they had in the past. The pattern of behavior is still out there for that use. So by stopping the availability or curtailing the availability of the OxyContin, sure, people have moved on to other types of things, but you don't throw more gasoline on the fire by bringing this out. This is a bad policy decision to do something like this. It's not going to benefit anybody in terms of what you will see with increased crime and break-ins and abuse of this medication again.
Do people really need this drug, or are there alternatives?
There are always alternatives. The issue is that, as with any narcotic medication, it can be abused. It was the fact that it's just easily managed in terms of being abused, in terms of its potential because of how it's formulated. It's quite powerful just in terms of its equivalence to morphine. When you give medications, it can be you know, you have things like hydromorphone or oxycodone, codeine, morphine, all kinds of narcotic medications. So all of them have the potential to cause exactly the same problem. It's just that they're more concentrated in certain types. And that's where you end up with more of the abuse, because you're getting more of a dose per use. So is it useful? Yes, it is useful in certain circumstances. People who have cancer pain, terminal pain, you know, they're in order to keep them comfortable. People who have certain chronic pain syndromes. But the issue is that for many pain syndromes, it's not just the narcotic that's used. There are other medications used in conjunction to keep the narcotic use or dose at a minimum because of the tolerance that can develop over time, where you have to keep increasing doses. So it's not in and of itself an evil medication. It's how it's been applied in its use that has been the problem.
Okay, back to the phones, and Peter is up next. Peter.
Hi.
Hi, Peter. Go ahead.
Yes, I was curious about your opinion on long-term usage of Propecia.
Propecia is a medication that's used to prevent hair loss. It's a finasteride is the generic name for it. And it originally and still is one of the mainstays of treatment to treat men who have enlarged prostates or have a condition called benign prostatic hypertrophy. Every man, for the most part, over the age of 50, their prostate will get larger over time, which can cause urinary problems by obstructing the bladder and not being able to empty properly. And so what they found is when they used the regular dose of finasteride, which was 5 milligrams a day, which worked to help gradually shrink down the prostate and control that condition, they found that men who were balding or losing hair had either cessation or dramatic slowdown on that hair loss and had some hair growth that came back. And the way what they decided to do is they looked at the actual dose that would be used to prevent hair loss. And they found that a dose of about a milligram or 1/120th of the dose was acceptable. And the way the medication works is it blocks the conversion of testosterone into a form called 5-HT or 5-hydroxytestosterone. 5-HT, interestingly, affects the hair follicles on the head and shuts them down, but increases beard growth. That's why you can see a lot of balding men with very thick beards. And so it blocks that conversion, and by blocking that conversion, you end up with less hair loss. The issue in terms of long-term use, no evidence that it causes any harm over the long term, primarily because we've used the other medication at 5 times the dose to treat essentially a lifelong condition of enlarged prostates. And in fact, there is some very small amount of evidence that seems to indicate that it actually improves prostate health in terms of cancer risk. But again, that is very scant evidence. But nevertheless, the answer to your question is, no harm demonstrated from long-term use based on decades of use of this of its cousin, its original drug, which was 5 times the strength.
Back after the news with more of your phone calls for Dr. Barry Dworkin.
We got people convincing you that if you put some cream on your big, fat, giant, rubbing thunder thighs, that somehow they're going to get smaller. How asinine. You can't put cream on a part of your body and change how big the... Trust me, it's not possible to...
Okay, 3:39, Dr. Barry Dworkin is here. It's the Wednesday House Call on CFRA as we get back to the phone lines. And let's go to Almont and Jim. You're up next, sir. Go ahead.
Hi, it's actually Maureen. Jim placed the call, but it's okay. It's supposed to
all
be.
All right, good enough. Go ahead.
I'm the problem.
You're the problem. Okay. Right. Well, we'll see if we can get an answer for you. Go ahead.
Thank you.
Hi there.
Hi. I started to have pain. It started about a year ago. I got up in the morning and I stepped out of bed and turned to go towards the bathroom. I got this shooting pain from my foot right out into my hip. And so, of course, I started going to the doctor. At first, they thought maybe it was my hip. And mm-hmm. We'd done some x-rays there. And I had a little bit of arthritis there, but not anything to cause any problems. And because I've had a couple of knee replacements done, and the last one was done in 2009, they thought they'd check and make sure everything was okay there. So they checked that out, and everything was okay. So then they decided it must have been in the back. So then I had an MRI done on my back, and they decided that there was some stuff around the third and fourth and fourth and fifth vertebrae in my back. So on September the 19th in Kingston, they done a spinal stenosis.
They diagnosed the spinal stenosis?
Yeah. Well, they they done the surgery.
Okay.
On September 19th.
Okay.
And it was just like a day surgery. So I went in September 19th and had the surgery in the afternoon and stayed overnight and was released in the morning. I felt great that day. I could walk just easily with a cane. I had no, you know, no problem at all, eh? So I went and got my pain medication prescription filled and everything like that, and everything seemed to be okay until getting into the evening. I started to kind of feel like my legs and that were kind of tightening up, and I wasn't having very good movement in them. So anyway, I took my pain medication and everything and went to bed. And then when I got up Friday morning, you wouldn't believe the excruciating pain I was in. And I was all, my leg was all buckled up, and I mean, I could hardly move. Ended up, I went to the hospital in the ambulance here in Almont, and because the work had been done in Kingston, of course, they sent me to Kingston. So I was in the Kingston emergency from Friday afternoon until Saturday evening, and they sent me home Saturday evening to the hospital in Almont. So I was in the hospital in Almont until Wednesday of the next week, and I was released, like, using a walker, right? And so I used the walker at home for a few days, and it got that it didn't seem to be too bad, so I started using a cane again. And so I used a cane for, you know, for quite a while, but things didn't seem to be getting any better. And then one day I got these unbearable pains in my hip and buttocks area. I could hardly stand it, you know, and I mean, I'm on two different painkillers. I'm on codeine Continue, 150 milligrams of that. I take twice a day, and then I'm on a another one that I can take on top of that every 4 hours if I want to. It's a type of the Oxycontin. I think it's got something that's in the Motrin pills, like a combination of those two.
Okay.
I think, and so I'm on them, and still, I mean, it's pretty well, well, it's 2 months since the surgery, and things just seem to be getting worse, not better. I'm going to physio now.
So the type of so the surgery they did, it was spinal surgery?
Mm-hmm.
They opened up your spine, and they let you go the next day?
Right, yeah.
And I just find that odd.
Yeah, I found that odd when they first told me about it, and they said, oh, no, this is just a... day surgery.
So did they cut open the spine, or was there needles that they put in? What exactly did they do?
No, they cut it open and went in, and, you know, he said he took out, you know, what stuff was in there that shouldn't have been in there, and he sent everything away for, he sent, like, samples away, you know, for get tested and stuff like that. And
so there was a disc rupture in the spine that was pressing on the nerve? Is that what they told you, or?
He just said that there was materials in there that had built up over the years. You know, he said there wasn't really a specific, you know, damage to any of the discs or anything.
Okay.
So, no, he...
Well, it sounds like, you know, the day that you felt better was probably because you had a lot of anesthesia.
So that
was there, so that's why you felt well. And then the next day, the anesthesia wore off.
Yeah.
And ultimately, what happens if pain is not effectively managed, in this case, your body compensates. You try to move in ways that your body really doesn't want to move, but you're just trying to prevent pain.
Yeah.
And hence, you can get the buttock pain and the upper leg pain and all the other pains associated with that, because your gait starts to change. You start to walk differently. The pain inhibits a normal pattern of movement. And as a result, you end up with even more pain. So ultimately, as you noted, right after the surgery where you felt really well and you could walk and function reasonably well, ultimately what we want to look for is more adequate pain management for you, at least to give you better mobility, because for these type of injuries, you want to be as mobile as possible. Mm-hmm. You want to build up your leg strength and muscle strength to be able to function properly. So if you're just taking medications that are only narcotic-based, so in this case, if you're taking the codeine Contin and then and something for breakthrough pain, it's not the full gamut of things that can be used to control your pain. There are other medications that can be used in conjunction with what you're using that will help alleviate some of the discomfort you're having. So there's that aspect of it. The other aspect is the follow-up that you have to see if things have healed properly. Is there the person that did the surgery, are they following up with you at any time soon just to see how you're doing or what?
Well, I went back to him on about six or 7 weeks after the surgery.
Mm-hmm.
I went back up and he got all my reports and everything up, and he checked, you know, to make sure everything was okay with the incision and stuff. Right. And he said, no, he said, everything looked okay. He said, I should just be able to get up and get going. He said, just get some physiotherapy to strengthen my core.
Okay, so what we're looking at then is providing adequate pain relief in order for you to move around a bit better. And secondly, to look at that there may be other types of physical therapy that can be of assistance to you. Other things that may be helpful are not only the walkers, but something for your foot, have your feet looked at just to make sure that you have proper support for your feet, especially if your gait is changing. You may be putting pressure on areas where your foot and your knee and your hip try and compensate. And so having your foot looked at to see if you have need an orthotic or something along those lines to try and help. But ultimately, this sounds structural from what you're talking about. And because of the compensating over all this time and moving differently because of that pain, it sets up a vicious cycle where you have pain, you don't move the way you'd like to move, you start using parts of your body to avoid the pain, those parts of your body start to hurt even more, and around it goes. So we have to break that cycle, and that's going to require not only the physical therapy, but other medications. And so the other medications, which are non-narcotic based, are certainly you can use the anti-inflammatories, but there's others such as the lady that called us earlier in the show who's using Sesamet, which is used also for pain management. Other medications such as Lyrica or Gabapentin in conjunction with that can work. So there are other options, and that's the hopeful thing out of this, and the message out of this is that it just seems that you're not getting all the pain management that's possible in order for you to function well.
We have to move along and fit in a few more calls here before the end of the Wednesday house call. Alan in Almont.
Yes, good afternoon, Doctor.
Afternoon.
Good afternoon, Rob.
Hi.
Doctor, I've had a couple of bouts with vertigo.
Mm-hmm.
I'm 64 years old. It never occurred before, but last year I had a bout of it. I woke up in the morning and the ceiling was spinning.
Mm-hmm.
Went to emergency, and the doctor advised that I use the Epley maneuver.
Right.
And I did, and it worked. It worked fine.
Okay.
I had another bout last Saturday. Again, opened my eyes in the morning, ceiling spinning. My wife helped me with the Epley maneuver, and again, it worked fine. But I have a couple of questions about vertigo, if I may.
Sure.
Can it occur when I'm walking down the street or driving a vehicle, or does it occur when you wake up in the morning?
No, it can occur at any time. It's the reason it happens, and the reason the Epley maneuver works, and it's a treatment for, just for our listeners, it's a treatment for what we call benign positional vertigo. So the balance organs that are in the, that are embedded in the bone behind the ear are little canals filled with fluid. And you can get tiny crystals that deposit in these canals and block the free movement of fluid that allows the brain to interpret how you move and how you turn your head. Hence, you get dizzy when that fluid gets obstructed. And the Epley maneuver moves that crystal into an area of that balance organ that's a larger, it's almost like a reservoir. And so the crystal doesn't obstruct the water flow or the fluid flow anymore. And that's why that works. But that crystal can happen at any time. and make you feel quite dizzy. Now, usually when you're still and not moving as much, the crystal gets a chance to settle. So that's hence when you're sleeping at night, your head is in one position, it can sometimes block things up that way. But really, vertigo can happen at any time.
Oh, I see. Another thing I was wondering, is it best to use a medication, or is the Epley maneuver just a temporary, and is this something I have to look forward to, pardon the pun, for the rest of my life?
Well, it's something that can recur. The Epley maneuver is very effective, and if it eliminates the vertigo, you don't have to use any medication. It's when someone does the Epley maneuver or is experiencing a lot of vertigo and not finding any relief that medications are used to block the signals that cause you to feel vertiginous or dizzy. But if the Epley maneuver works, then I would say no, there's no need for you to take any medication right now to deal with that.
Okay, we are right out of time. I apologize we couldn't get to more calls this week. Thank you for coming in.
Oh, you're very
good
welcome.
Good to see you.
Good
back
see
on
you
Sunday.
Back on Sunday.
Sunday's at 4 with the Sunday house call.